Welcome to our podcast, Healthy Brain Banter. This is a podcast created by a team of nursing students to bring you accurate and reliable information about mental health. In this episode, we will be discussing the links between physical health and mental health. We know that many people struggle with both mental health and physical health challenges, and we want to shed light on the intersection between the two. It is difficult to have one without the other, as both are tied so closely together. In fact, the World Health Organization stated that there is no health without mental health. Those who suffer from physical health challenges also are likely to struggle with mental health challenges. The CDC states depression increases the risk for many types of physical health problems, particularly long-lasting conditions like diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. Similarly, the presence of chronic conditions can increase the risk of mental health. Struggling physically can cause feelings of frustration, loneliness, and hopelessness. In this interview, we will be talking to Kat Nelson about how her physical health has impacted her mental health. Kat Nelson is an educator with 20 years of experience as a special education teacher, coach, and mentor. She has a master's degree in special education from the University of Utah. After working for Murray School District as a special education teacher, she taught classes for the special education department at the University of Utah. She also was an instructional coach for Canyon School District and Murray District. Her ability to connect with teachers and students alike has allowed her great success, and she is a sought-after expert in her field. Her extensive knowledge of best practices for students with disabilities has helped many prospective teachers who have taken her assessment and behavior classes at the University of Utah. Her deep passion for supporting students from all backgrounds is a pivotal part of her approach to teaching and mentoring, and is the driving force behind her unapologetic advocacy for students getting what they need. Kat, we are so excited to have you on our podcast today, and we can't wait to learn from you. So we want to start out with the question that we ask all of our podcast guests: what is the best tool in your life for creating a healthy mind?
Well, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me. Okay, so the best tool that I've found is drugs. No, I'm just kidding. Honestly, drugs are a piece of it, but in conjunction with a therapist that I trust has been one of the most successful tools for me to get started and move forward in my mental health.
That's great. So we'd love to dive into a little bit more about you and your physical health and your mental health. So can you start off by telling us about your diagnosis of arthritis?
Yeah, I was actually diagnosed in 2013 with an autoimmune disease called ankylosing spondylitis. It's a form of arthritis that causes pain in joints and ligaments, along with other symptoms of fatigue and sometimes eye pain. In 2012, I had some symptoms, but we weren't sure that it was leading to that diagnosis. So it took about a year to get diagnosed. Yeah, it took about a year to find the diagnosis.
So with this diagnosis, I'm sure it was a big change in your life and caused a lot of rediscovery of how you were going to handle things. And so how did your arthritis affect your mental health in the beginning of your diagnosis, and how did you deal with that?
Yeah, you're totally right. Rediscovery is a perfect word for that. I was going along healthy, happy, no pain, and then all of a sudden I had extreme fatigue and body pain all over, and wasn't able to do the things that came so easily to me before. My son was 3 years old, and I was working at the University of Utah, teaching night classes and then supervising students during the day. And I had extreme fatigue. When I had downtime, all I wanted to do was watch TV or sleep, which is not a normal activity. Well, I enjoy them now, but it wasn't a normal activity for me at the time. So I was able to go to a rheumatologist at the University of Utah, and they happened to be doing a study for Humira, which is one of the treatments of ankylosing spondylitis, which is a shot that I give myself twice a month. I was really, really nervous to start that because I was so healthy before. I was active. I loved to be in nature as much as possible, and I spent all the time I could in nature. So I wanted to try maybe some homeopathic things, but at the end of it, I decided to trust the science and the evidence and move forward with the treatment, the drug treatment. The mental health kind of came later, because I was dealing so much with the physical. So it took about 2 years until I realized that I was having some pretty good depression. When the pain was under management, the TV watching didn't seem to end, and I didn't want to watch TV. I didn't want to lay around. I felt like I would get really impatient and short with people around me who I loved and were trying to help me. And I really wanted to withdraw, which was not, again, a normal thing for me. The tricky part is, with mental illness, you don't recognize that you're doing those things until maybe it's fairly extreme. And the other part is that it doesn't, for me, it wasn't sadness or loneliness that is often described by depression. Those are emotions that we are lucky enough to feel that cue us into what we need and things like that. But the depression is actually an illness, and it's taken me some time to learn this. It's not an emotion, and it can affect you in so many different ways. So the unexplained temper that I had, or tendency to withdraw, those were symptoms of my depression. And realizing that I had a lack of motivation and a lack of passion to do the things that I had so much passion for before helped me to say, I need to get some help. We often don't give ourselves permission to get that help until the damage is done or routines have been deeply established of watching the TV or sleeping too long, or that maybe wouldn't get so deeply rooted if we were able to get that help before it's too late.
Yeah. I love how you say that depression isn't a feeling, but it's an actual illness, because I think that's something that a lot of people don't initially realize, and that some people often describe sadness or laziness or things like that as depression. But instead, depression is the illness, and those can be symptoms of it, but there's many symptoms and everyone's going to experience it differently.
Yeah, the thing that you say about, I called myself lazy so often, and it was just not fair. We're so unkind to ourselves. Because I went from being so active to, it did feel like I was being lazy, but that wasn't it. It was being depressed. And so being kind to yourself and realizing, like, this isn't the thing that needs to define me. I need to seek better ways to help myself, I guess.
Yeah. And I'm sure that was hard for you to realize, going from such a happy and active lifestyle to such a more isolated, withdrawing, and feeling lazy even when you weren't. So how did you make that switch in your brain that it wasn't that you were being lazy, but instead that you were having problems with your mental health?
So a lot of that had to do with talking to a professional. I was lucky enough to seek help from a therapist, and that therapist guided me to a psychiatrist. And so between the two of them, it took me to a place of information that I could see that this wasn't a terminal illness for me, that I could relabel things and move forward in that positive direction.
Right. And that you could find things that you used to love, you could learn to love them again.
Right.
Yeah.
Some of those loves I had to see in a different direction. You mentioned like finding those loves. And I know you'll ask a question maybe about what tools I use, because I've heard your former podcasts and the question you like to ask. And really, that's one thing that is important, is being able to do the things that I love and maybe adapt them in a way that actually fits. Oftentimes, and I was wanting to say earlier that the routine that I find, I often wanted to find a routine that I fit into versus finding the routine that fits into me. And so instead of forcing a routine that, oh, everybody wakes up at 5:30 and goes running, and that wasn't a routine that worked for me, I needed to find a routine that actually felt good to me. And that is a work in process, and a work in progress as well. but it will continue to be a lifelong journey to be able to find and adapt those things that I love.
Yeah, I think that's great how you said you need to find a routine that fits you, because I think too, a lot of times it's really easy, especially today, to compare ourselves to people around us and think, oh, if they're doing this, I can do it too. But instead realizing what's best for you and making your routine and your life fit your needs. So I wanted to ask if there's any physical things that make your mental health worse.
It's funny because I do have to, when I'm in a flare, which is what I call it when my arthritis kind of feels worse, or let my joints swell or my ligaments do funny things, or is I really sometimes overrest can affect my arthritis, which also will affect my mental health, and sometimes overexertion. So it's a yin yang kind of situation that I have to be really careful of. And so what I've learned is that my body, listening to my body, is the best resource that I have, because it's not always the same. And so rest is so important to me. And I've had to realize that rest is not a four-letter word because of that lazy stigma. But rest is really important, but the right amount of rest is important. And sometimes I like to, if I feel good, I'm going to peak a mountain today. And that's not something that maybe I should do, going from the couch of resting to climbing a mountain, but rather do a nature walk would be better.
Yeah. And how did you find that balance between not over resting, but not over exerting?
I mean, I'm still finding it, honestly, because every flare is a little bit different. And things that will cause a flare is stress, but also the things that will help my mental health and help my flare and help my stress are all things related to each other. So some of it is research and reading and talking to my therapist, and some of it is action and doing things, trial and error. So it just takes time.
Yeah, that's really helpful, because I think that that's something to remember, is that it's not going to be perfect on the first try. And even if you feel like you have it down, one flare might be different than another. And so you need to take it day by day. Yeah. So what can family and friends or neighbors do to support someone with a physical health challenge?
I love this question because, honestly, we are a community by design, and we're creatures that we crave human contact. So the thing that family and friends can do are just form those relationships of trust and of being there. And within that, and this is something I've learned through therapy, is creating vulnerable spaces that you be vulnerable. And then when someone is being vulnerable to you, you have empathetic responses and you're empathetic to that. That vulnerable, empathetic relationship is critical that for family and friends to have for me. Sometimes I need space and sometimes I need people to show up. And if people can't be vulnerable and empathetic, then it's really hard for me to communicate that. I think one thing that is really tricky is I might have an expectation for my husband or my kids or my friends, but I didn't communicate that expectation. So if they don't do it, I'm disappointed. But I can only really be disappointed in myself in that situation because I wasn't able to communicate that expectation. So if we establish that relationship of vulnerability, then I can say, hey, I need this. I need you to bring me dinner tonight. I need some space today. I need you to tell me a joke. It's okay to say what you need. And that's been another thing. Help and rest are not four-letter words in the negative way. Help is something that, like, I've learned to have to say yes to. And I've got such a great support of neighbors and friends and family that's willing to do that. Sometimes if people are talking about their own experiences, that's really helped to keep my own isolation at bay. It's hard for me to, like, if someone says, you should do this, I don't like that. I call it being should on. but it's not a fun, I don't like someone to tell me that because I really am doing the things that I want to do and try to do to make me healthier. But if someone talks about their own experiences and what worked for them, it helps me to know I'm not alone. And that's more important than telling me what I should or shouldn't do. So being open with our expectations and then being vulnerable to listen and talking about our own experiences are great things that family can do.
I think that's the perfect answer because it's something that is really easy for people to do, but something that I think a lot of people aren't aware of that they can be doing. And so creating a space of vulnerability and being clear with their expectations as well so that both parties' expectations are clear so you can communicate openly and vulnerably.
Exactly.
So what has helped you to create positive mental health habits and what are some of those habits?
Like I said, it's a lifelong journey. But one thing, because honestly, one thing won't always work the same as it did. Like I said before, the flares aren't the same and the mental health struggles aren't always the same. So what I like to do is I like to make lists and kind of help organize. I also am blessed with ADHD. And so making a list of possible things that can help me while I'm having a flare or feeling like I'm moving towards depression is nice because I can look at that list and say, this isn't going to work today, but this thing will work today. So what I like to do is create lists of things that might give me a creative outlet. Like I said, I need to be moving and active with arthritis, but sometimes too much physical activity, if I'm in a flare, can really make things feel a little bit worse. So I found things like quilting or gardening or puzzles or board games that really aren't that expensive or time consuming that I can do, but still feel like I'm contributing and still feel like I'm learning and growing. So I really like to put things that keep me stimulated on a list. I know it's a silly thing to do, but it's what's worked for me so far.
I think that's perfect because I think sometimes people can overcomplicate self-care or taking care of your mental health, and it can be as simple as keeping a list and putting your expectations on that list of, I want to be creative, I want to be active, I want to have a spiritual outlet or things like that. And having that in a place where you can see it and in a place where you have the ability to change things depending on how you feel that day.
Right. And it's not a list that I cross off. It's not a to-do list. It's a brainstorming list. So I need to keep that in mind that these aren't all the things I have to do to be successful. These are possible things I can do to be successful.
I really like that. I think the list is a great idea of not having a to-do list because that can often cause more stress and mental health distress as well. But instead having a list of things you can do and things that will bring you joy, because then it helps keep those ideas clear, especially with your ADHD, and you'll have something that you can come back to that will help you to feel fulfilled that day.
Totally.
So do you have any resources that you'd recommend for someone experiencing physical health and mental health intersecting in their lives?
So I think it's really important to keep in mind that we need to invest in ourselves. Some things can be expensive, like therapy and psychiatry. And I love the free resources that you guys have here at the school to provide for its students. And all universities have that accessibility, I believe. So that therapy and psychiatry relationship has been critical to me moving forward. So taking the time to invest in myself, taking the time and taking the money that it's needed, because I might say it's expensive, but it's less expensive than the other alternatives. The other thing, another resource is, and this is another one of those simple things of just naming it. If I can name it, then I know that that scary thing might not look as scary if I'm saying it out loud. Naming it can also help people around me, my support system, my husband, to know what's going on. Now I just have to say something simple as I'm in a flare or I'm feeling a flare coming on, and he knows what that means. We don't have to talk about it to death. We can if we choose to, but being able to name it makes that hard thing become less scary.
I think that's so helpful, because physical ailments and also mental ailments are so complicated and so individualized. And so having that outlet to name it, and then also to describe it to people who are close to you so they can understand what that means, I'm having a flare or whatever it is for you, having that language that you can use in those relationships is so helpful, because then they understand and you understand and you're on the same page. But it takes work to get there, that you have to name it, you have to explain it and describe it and try and help them understand. So I think that's a really good resource.
Also, there's so many simple things like walking. I use a free yoga YouTuber, Karen Baginski. She's wonderful and it's free. I use journaling. There's so many free resources that are simple that can help you come from out of a dark place into a positive light.
Yeah. I think, too, it's like what you said, that every time you experience a mental downfall, it's going to be different. And so you may need to try something new or use a different resource you've never used before. So having a lot of these resources we've talked about, it may work sometimes and it may not work other times. So having like a list, like you said, of things that you can do or things that you can work on are really helpful to overcome those dark times mentally. Do you have any final thoughts for us, Kat?
I'm so grateful to be able to share my experiences. The vulnerability that it takes to share experiences feels very scary at times, but I know that when we open up and we're able to talk about that, it just creates avenues for other people to feel like they're not alone and that it's time to get the help and resources that they need. And sometimes that's just reaching out to the person sitting next to you. Sometimes that's reaching out to a therapist, but reaching out and knowing that you're not alone, reaching out is the first step.
Thank you so much. We'd like to thank you for joining us this week on our podcast, Healthy Brain Banter. And thank you, Kat, for being vulnerable with your mental and physical health journey. And we want to recognize that this is Kat's personal journey with mental health, and not everyone's experience will be the same. And so if you're experiencing a difficult time mentally, please reach out to a trusted family member, friend, or professional to receive help. And we'd like to thank you, Kat, again for joining us and for all of our listeners tuning in.
Thank you.